Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 1st of November, Anno Domini 2014. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Before we do the news...
Welcome back.
Thank you very much. You guys did a great job last week. You two and Rob... Roblin did an excellent job last week. We want to thank everyone who was so kind and so generous as to donate to the pledge drive. We did not make our goal, and that's on those of you who just couldn't be bothered to give us $5. But the rest of you, thank you so very much for your generous donations. And now on to the news. The growing availability of cheap music, from free videos and streams to $10 a month unlimited subscriptions plans, is sapping demand for digital downloads at the world's biggest seller of music, Apple. Music sales at Apple's iTunes store have fallen 13 to 14% worldwide since the start of the year, according to people familiar with the matter. The decline is stark compared to a much shallower dip last year. Global revenue from downloads fell 2.1% in 2013, according to the International Federation of the Phonographic Industry.
Phonograph?
That's exactly right. Not pornograph, phonograph. The plummeting download numbers help illustrate why Apple bought the $10 a month subscription streaming service Beats Music earlier this year as part of its $3 billion acquisition that included the headphone maker Beats Electronics, which are really kind of lousy headphones. I'm sorry.
They're really good for rap, which apparently
they're designed for rap. They have a great bass response and very little treble response. So if you actually want to listen to real music with them, you know, music that also has highs as well as lows. It's terrible. They're terrible headphones. Hmm. But if what you're listening to is stuff that you're really just interested in the driving beat and it's in the name, that's what you get. Anyway, Apple is rebuilding Beats Music and plans to relaunch it next year as part of iTunes, according to, again, people familiar with the matter. Some record company executives worry their industry could lurch back into decline after several years of relative stability. Should download sales decline faster than streaming growth accelerates. A key part of that equation, executives say, is persuading enough users of online music services to pay a monthly subscription fee, usually $10 a month, rather than stick with free versions that carry advertising and generate much less revenue for record sales. Spotify AB offers such a free ad-supported option. Beats Music does not. Factoring in CD sales, which have been plunging for well over a decade, overall music sales in most of the world held steady last year. Japan was an exception, with steep drops in physical and digital sales alike. Worldwide revenue from recorded music totaled $15 billion, in 2013, in the U.S., recorded music sales are nearly 50% below their peak in 2000, though they've been essentially flat for the last few years. This year's decline in global iTunes music sales mirrors domestic declines. U.S. revenue from downloads of singles and albums fell 11% and 14%, 11% for singles, 14% for albums, in the first half of 2014, according to the Recording Industry Association of America. God bless them. But a 28% jump in revenue from streaming music services helped overall digital revenue increase slightly to $2.2 billion in the first 6 months of the year. So, our question to you, would you pay $10 a month for streaming music? Do you now? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-04.
And from what I have read, a lot of people like the streaming because it's a flat rate. You can listen to all kinds of music, millions of songs. You can listen to the same song again. One of the things that Steve Jobs had said in the early days was that people want to own their music. Well, maybe not anymore. Kids have grown up listening to streaming music, and kids these days don't want to pay for anything.
Right.
And so now almost all the streaming services, probably all of them, give you a button to buy that song if you want to make it part of your library. But generally, it's you listen
most
to the stream.
Don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people listen to the stream because it's like radio in the old days, right? You would listen to the top 40 station. That's really all you heard,
mm-hmm.
was the top 40 station. But that meant you heard all the songs you liked all day long.
And without the commercials.
Because you didn't know there were other songs.
Well, that's certainly part of it.
Yeah, but
and the nice thing about the streaming music is that you do hear other songs. You can bring up stations you've never heard before.
Yep.
You hear a new artist in your station.
Right.
Maybe you start a station with that artist, and now you've got new music you've never heard before, and it's still all free.
And like I said, though, unlike regular radio, it's fewer ads.
Right, and it's fewer ads.
I mean, just like Sirius and all the rest of these, you just turn a station on, and maybe once in a blue moon you might hear an advertisement, and it's very short.
Yep.
Most of the time it's streaming the music you want to hear, not all this other, verbiage and everything
else. And they've got ads that pop up on the screen, but who's looking at the screen?
Yeah, especially if you're walking around the house or doing something else. Or you got another screen open.
You open it in a tab, and you don't go back to that tab.
Yeah. I go to another tab, and I'm working on other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, it's not that, invasive.
Yeah.
It's intrusive, rather, I should say.
I've also read that a lot of kids don't listen to radio, period, or even streaming radio. They go to YouTube and watch, in essence, illegal videos until they get caught and put down.
Right.
Until that band puts out their official video.
Right. Or a lot of them like to do Pandora.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do Pandora or Spotify.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They'll put it on there, and they can even mark the ones that they like.
Right.
And they'll search for those artists. So, if I like a particular band on that, I can say that I like this one, and it'll search for other tunes.
Yep. And we're seeing that everywhere, this whole idea of disruptive technology. The fact that the iTunes was disruptive. It disrupted the standard recording industry model of you put out a CD and people buy it.
Yeah.
People were buying individual songs now.
Yeah.
Much more often than they were buying like a single CD single, right? Now iTunes is being disrupted by the streaming services.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing we're finding is happening in the cable industry. Cable has something called upfronts. And what those are is every year they bring their new shows to the advertisers and say, here's, this is the next Big Bang Theory. Right,
mm-hmm.
nerd comedy, or this is the next Bones, or this is the next NCIS, or whatever it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they show a couple episodes, and they bring people out and do a dog and pony show, and yada yada yada.
Yeah.
And then people bid on it. For the first time in history, this year, the amount of money spent on upfronts went down.
Hmm.
It went down 6%. Which is, when you're talking billions of dollars,
that's
a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
Next year, they're predicting it'll go down 20-30%. Because now, where are all the talent going? They're going to Netflix. They're going to Amazon. They're going to Hulu. All of these people are putting out their own series. And you go to Netflix, you're paying $8 a month for Netflix and no commercials.
Yeah.
I pay, $100 a month for cable, and I see commercials all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so which am I going to do? And also, that whole idea of binge watching.
Oh, yeah. That's become a biggie.
Right.
You should explain what binge watching is.
Yeah, binge watching means that you get all the episodes at once. So when House of Cards or Transparent or Orange is the New Black comes out on Netflix or Hulu or any of them, you get the whole season at once. So you don't have to sit down and wait. You don't have to I forgot. Now I got to wait for it to show up on demand, whatever, whatever. I can watch any episode anytime I want, go back and rewatch them, watch the whole season in a single sitting if I want to. Assuming I want to spend eight hours of my life doing that. But I can, right?
Yeah.
And that used to be what we did with DVDs.
Right.
You get the DVD of a season of whatever, and you watch the whole season at once.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And that's becoming huge now. There are binge-watching parties. I don't know how legal that is, but I'm not here to argue that right now. But there are binge-watching parties.
Less than 10.
Yeah, less than 10 is legal, exactly. Excuse me, you meant fewer than 10.
Yes.
Yes, you did. So if I have fewer than 10 people coming to my house to watch something, I guess it's all right. So I gather eight with me, right? So nine with me. So eight of my closest friends, and we sit around and watch the next season of Orange is the New Black or Transparent or whatever it is, and I'm good. And now with Marvel bringing Iron Fist and three other, I won't go through the whole litany.
17 new movies they announced.
Yeah, well, they announced 17 new
Marvel
movies. Marvel did. Yeah, that through over the next like 15 years. I have to wait for two more years before a Doctor Strange movie.
Yeah,
well, because I saw that Marvel's has got next year the new where all of the characters get together.
Avengers.
Yeah.
In 2019, we're getting Avengers Part 1 and Part 2, whatever that big...
The Infinity
War. Infinity War.
But there also is going to be... That's the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There's also going to be the Marvel, I guess, Netflix Universe. They have four of their lesser characters, in quotes. Iron Fist and Luke Cage and a couple of others, and it doesn't matter. Unless you're a complete comic book geek, you don't even know who they are. But they form the Defenders at some point. So what we're looking at are four individual series, likely followed by a Defenders series. So there's five more series if you are a Netflix subscriber, and you can watch the whole series in one sitting if you want to.
Cool.
So if you're a fan of one of those characters, holy moly, have you got it made.
Yeah.
That's the new reality, and it's all due to this thing we call the internet, and it's all and that's the reason why so many people are looking to bring fiber to the home. Yes, thank you. Green light is in my neighborhood. They're not at my house yet. They're not actually at my house, but they are in my neighborhood.
Yeah. What do you define in neighborhood?
They're going to be doing my neighborhood next. My neighborhood will be fibered up next. We're the next one.
You know how that's going for you.
Yeah, so
they'll come right out the main street, wave to you as they're going by down the road.
They'll do all the other streets first, then they'll do all the other houses first.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know how that works for me.
Saying, you know, I don't want you to get your hopes up. You've been down this
road. My hopes have been up for a year.
I'm trying to let you down gently.
Thank you,
friend.
I appreciate it.
You know
I... I appreciate everything you do for me.
Yeah, I know.
The reality is that this is why people cut the cord, because they're getting 90% of what they want. Now, you can go to CBS.com and pay the $10 a month or whatever it is and watch all their shows. NBC.com, you can go see all their shows. ABC.com,
you can go $8 see a month. Shows.
Yeah. And so by doing all of that, you're still cheaper than cable.
Unless you watch a lot of different networks.
Unless you watch...
And then eventually that $8-$10 a month adds up to the $150 a month you were paying
for
cable.
That's quite a few networks to watch. I mean...
We watch a lot of History Channel, Smithsonian Channel, History 2. Well, see, now the History Network, I would hope you pay for History, you get all of their networks. You pay for Discovery, you get all of their networks.
Right.
Probably not, but I would hope that.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, even if you're watching 10 different networks, 10 different networks, that's $80.
And that's part of the problem is that...
That's not a lot. That's still cheaper.
And people don't know what network their show is on.
Right.
They might know the channel number, or they've set the DVR to record it, and it just does.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't... And that's why the networks have started putting those bugs in the corner, because they're losing their identity.
Yep. Right, because it's just the channel on cable.
It's kind of like phones. You know, I don't know my wife's phone number. She's speed dial too.
Exactly. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here in the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. This is my favorite story. Drawing inspiration from its Play Store, Google will create a hardware store in which users can buy and sell Lego-like hardware modules for the customizable Project Ara smartphone. Project Ara is Google's upcoming build-your-own smartphone that allows users to mix and match features. The $50 configurable smartphone will come with a basic frame, and users can add or remove features simply by snapping on or taking off modular parts. For example, users will be able to individually swap out screens, cameras, antennas, and CPUs, which could be a cheaper way to replace parts than buying new smartphones. Google is pursuing biometric modules. Independent hardware makers have mulled creating temperature input, gaming antenna, and medical sensors. Modules can be designed with Google's Module Developers Kit, which contains reference design specifications and guidelines. Anyone can create a module per the specifications in the developer's kit and put it in the Ara module marketplace, which is analogous to the Google Play Store, and sell directly to consumers, said Paul Aramenko, head of Project Ara at Google's Advanced Technology and Projects Division. Buyers will be able to see the most popular modules based on reviews and user ratings, much like with apps in the Google Play Store. A market pilot for Project Ara will begin in 2015, during which Google will try to understand usage and iron out kinks. Google has developed 3 Project Ara smartphone prototypes with different screen sizes, and Aramenko indicated it will be a while until final products ship worldwide. There's a lot more that we need to do in terms of retiring technical risks on the project. We have probably 2 more prototypes to make, and during the market pilot, we will have a lot to learn about how people interact with this device, Aramenko said. Modular phones are not a new concept. Israeli company Modu in 2010 announced BruPhone, to which keyboard, speaker, and camera modules could be attached. ZTE is developing a customizable smartphone called EcoMobius, which has not yet been released. The viability of Project Ara has been heavily debated, but Aramenko believed consumers will appreciate its flexibility. If we can span price points that range from a feature phone crossover price point all the way to an aspirational very high-end device that may be able to do portable medical diagnostics, that could potentially help us on the way to delivering the mobile internet to the next 5 billion people who are not smartphone-enabled. So would you like a modular phone, and what modules would you like to see? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, it would be nice to be able to upgrade the camera to a better one instead of waiting for your 2-year contract to be up and getting a whole new phone. Faster radios, better camera, each incremental upgrade instead of waiting for the whole thing.
Yeah, it's a very clever idea, and having specialized modules on your phone that do good things for your business, what a very clever idea. I really like the idea of Project Ara. Ara, of course, being the name of the constellation in the southern hemisphere that looks like an altar. Ara means altar. Anyway, to the phones. Our first caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys, and I am a member.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. I have 2 Apple questions, but first of all, I cannot get to the Soundbite site. I keep getting something that defaults to web servers.
Yep. The Soundbite site is down.
Something.
Yeah, the Soundbite site is down. There are a couple of technical reasons for that, and honestly, when I realized that people weren't pledging, I got very discouraged and went on to other things this week.
Oh,
but I will get it fixed. It's just a matter of finding the time to do it.
Okay. Well, first question. I upgraded my Mac to Yosemite, and my phone is up to 8.1. The first thing I have discovered on my iPhone now is that the others is full. I had 16 gig on the phone, and suddenly everything is gone. And for the life of me, I cannot figure out what others is or what's supposed to be in it or what suddenly filled it.
Yeah, a lot of time that's cache or diagnostic information. If you go on to the phone itself, the general settings usage, that will tell you what's using your space. And sometimes, I'm trying to bring it up here, sometimes it will tell you what all that other stuff is that iTunes shows you about in that little graph.
Okay. So if you can post something, I would appreciate it, because this has been rather frustrating. I don't have a lot on it, but since
yeah, 16 is very small these days.
It says it's 1 gig left, and as I said, I just can't figure out why suddenly it's full.
Yeah, it's a little annoying. Apple in the iPad line, they discontinued the 32 gig model, so now it goes 16, 64, 128.
Uh-huh.
Why didn't they start with the 32 gig model and then have 32, 60? Because 16 gigs isn't really enough.
Yeah. Well, I don't really use that much space. It's just that suddenly it's full, and I thought, well, did they download something they didn't tell you about or what? However, when I looked at my iPad after I upgraded it, it didn't seem to change, but the phone did, and I don't know why. So I thought I would call and ask.
Yeah, one of the suggestions is to back up, erase, and restore the phone.
Oh.
And that may clear out that other lines. So when you go into iTunes and connect your phone, it tells you how much space you're using for your movies and your photos,
right,
and your music.
Right.
And there's always this other line. And,
yeah.
And other is data that the phone collects itself. So it may be something to do with the location information that's been saved, the diagnostic information that gets saved. One of the checkboxes is to send diagnostic information to Apple, which is supposed to help them make the OS better. But then it saves that diagnostic data on your phone as well.
Well, and then so, it suddenly found its way to take up about 5.4 gigabytes of information that I can't figure out, but I'll look into it. The second question I have is my Mac. Suddenly now, every time I turn it on, the wastebasket is full. And when by that, I mean it always has a couple of folders of recovered files that I wind up just hitting the empty button. Never used to do that before.
Do you have Microsoft Word?
Yes, I do.
Microsoft Word is notorious for not cleaning up temp files. If you looked in those recovered files folder, they're most likely a Word temp file.
Actually not. It says something MERP AD database daemon.
The MERP AB?
A is an Apple, D is in David. MERP AD database daemon. It's always there. I can't figure out why.
Yeah, usually those are temp files. So when Word, is it still part of Microsoft? When Word closes, it leaves its temp file. It's still Microsoft. It's the Office 365.
Oh, okay.
Microsoft something, something, something. So it's in library application support, Microsoft MERP 2.0. So it's a temp file that Microsoft uses. And when you, the theory is if Word crashes, it saves that temp file so that you can recover your data. That almost never works, and it didn't crash anyway. Usually if you quit any of the Microsoft programs before you shut down the machine, that should help. But I'm seeing reports that that is an issue with the new Office 365 update.
It seems to, again, be related to error reporting.
Okay.
So
Microsoft Error Reporting Protocol, MERP?
MERP, exactly. If you go into Library, Application Support, Microsoft, MERP 2.0.
Okay.
And then go into Preferences, uncheck Enable Office Error Reporting.
So I'm going to beg Dave to please put that up, or I'm not writing that fast. I'm sorry. Library.
Application support.
Well, in a Microsoft app. Well, the actual file itself is in your application support.
Okay.
But is it is it preferences in that program or in
that's
in,
what it says
Word?
Here.
Let me find that back.
It doesn't actually work for everybody, but
okay. So sometimes it's there. Place. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So library application support go inside that,
And then Microsoft. Yep. And then MERP.
Okay, Microsoft.
So that must be a program to be able to get into preferences.
Okay.
And turning off error reporting should tell it not to save those error files.
And okay. Sometimes that works and sometimes that doesn't, okay. According to what I'm reading on the net.
Okay. So my library, app support, Microsoft, MERP, and going to MERP and then turn off error support.
Yeah,
there's a preferences in there somewhere that lets you turn it off.
Okay, because, again, this is a recent problem that I've never had before, and I just couldn't figure out what's going on.
Yep.
Yeah, it's probably a conflict between Office 365 and Yosemite, and Microsoft will release an update to fix it.
Okay. Or not.
Eventually, or not, yeah.
All right, and assuming I can't do that, I'll just resort to doing what I do, open up the basket and delete it.
Yep.
Right, oh. And again, you don't have to necessarily delete it every time. The reality is that if your hard drive is not terribly full,
no, and it's not,
then you can empty it once a week. You know, it's not hurting anything to be just sitting there. It's a few K worth of files.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yep,
at least my fears are allayed. Yep.
Yes, they are.
Thank you, guys.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
I just looked in my trash, and I've got four of them too.
There you go.
The MERP AD Microsoft Auto Update. Yeah, so it's a Microsoft problem.
It's a Microsoft problem. and I get it. There, you know, again, as we've said a million times. Well, first, you know, to be entirely honest, Macintosh is not their main focus in life. Yeah, but they did it right. You know, if it's a file that you don't want anymore, they throw it in your trash.
Well, nothing wrong with that.
I guess that's the thing to do, you know. I guess they could just delete it immediately, but throwing it in the trash is the Apple way. So
I'd rather see it that way. At least they're not overzealous either.
Right.
You know, they're being conservative. They get it in the trash.
If there happened to be something in there you wanted,
yes,
you'd
exactly.
be happy it was in the trash.
Because, right. Yeah, that's the thing. You might have put something in the trash just because, yeah, you don't want to deal with it right now. But there's an off chance you might want to pull it back. So if
well, then you put it in a folder marked later or something. You don't. I see so many people who do this. They use the trash in every
yes.
operating system. They use the trash as a place to store things.
Yes.
This file is important to me. Let me leave it in the trash. You don't do that in real life. Why do you do that on your desktop?
Because some folks, you know, it's just so yeah. it's out of mind.
Yeah.
But like you said, though, if that app turned around and then also emptied the trash,
right,
and you had other stuff in there, you'd be hosed. What they should have is a temporary trash.
Almost trash.
No, you want a file called later. Just make a folder and call it later.
You know that, and I know that. And we could preach to the choir until the cows come home. And that's not going to happen because the trash bucket's there, and you can right-click on it and say delete. And it goes to the trash. They need to sit there and say send to temp folder or a temp folder or whatever.
I have a folder called NFC, and that's where I put all the things. I'm not entirely sure what they are, and someday I'll take a look at them.
And that folder gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
And that's the problem.
And there lies the challenge. No, not the problem, the challenge.
Yep.
Do I really want to get rid of it, or do I want to procrastinate and hold on to it just a little bit longer?
And then every once in a while, just to make myself even crazier, I go look in my temp folder.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. That's a nightmare.
Yep.
For anybody.
Yep. And how many of us clean out our download folder with any regularity?
Yep. I was just talking with a customer the other day about that.
I admit it.
That we used to keep all of our downloads because they took so gosh darn long to download on dial-up that we needed to keep them in case to reinstall. But now with everyone ubiquitous broadband, you're better off deleting it. And if you do need to reinstall it, re-download it, you'll get a newer version.
That's right.
That's one thing, Kathy has even made a comment, like on my phone, messages and all that. Once I've sent stuff in there, by the end of the day, I clear all that stuff out. Emails and all that, if I don't, you know, if I've answered it, I delete it. That, I don't need it. If it's that important, I'll redo it.
That could be the from the previous caller, that other statement could be messages, because it will save your previous text messages as well.
So that may be a large part of it. So if he goes into his phone,
delete the old messages. You'll be surprised how far back you can scroll. Basically, since you started the conversation with that person 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
Well, right. All right, that jaunty music. Tells me that it's time for us to take another short intermission. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Phone carriers want to get into the mobile ad delivery business using what they know about their smartphone-addicted customers to provide to profile them for advertisers to deliver on-the-nose, or rather on-the-finger, ads. Researchers recently took a close look at the privacy toll of carriers. Verizon and AT&T rolling this out. They're tagging their customers with unique codes that are visible to third parties, making smartphone users far easier to track on the web than they've ever been before. After the findings by researchers, AT&T admitted it's testing a new way of tracking its customers for ad display purposes. There's nothing ready to announce, said AT&T spokes robot Mark Siegel. We're still testing. But that means, yes, AT&T customers are being tagged by AT&T in a way that's visible to the websites they visit, but AT&T says it's building in what it considers to be a privacy protective measure. The unique code for each user will change every 24 hours. AT&T said this is happening now, but Kenneth White, one of the researchers who discovered the tracking, says that is categorically untrue, saying he found 3 identifying codes being sent by AT&T that were persistent. AT&T does not currently have a mobile relevant advertising program. We are considering such a program, and any program we would offer would maintain our fundamental commitment to customer privacy, read a statement from AT&T. For instance, we are testing a numeric code that changes every 24 hours on mobile devices to use in programs where we serve ads to the mobile device. This daily rotation on the numeric code would help protect the privacy of our customers. Customers would also could opt out of any future AT&T programs that might use this numeric code. AT&T declined to say how long the test had been running, saying only that it had been, and I quote, a little while. AT&T calls what Verizon is doing similar, but says that AT&T would not include the unique identifier and IP packets for customers who opted out. According to reports, Verizon's customers who opted out of tracking are still seeing a unique tracking code inserted into the URLs for websites they visited. So do you mind being tracked in yet another way on your phone? And do you mind getting ads from yet another group of people? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Seems like we're already getting too many ads. We don't need more.
Yeah, really.
Well, yes, we do, because that's the only way that
they can
the carriers are going to get even more money out of you. Yeah. They're not subsidizing anything. They're already subsidizing the phone. You're already paying for the phone in your monthly bill.
Well, what I mean by subsidizing is, all right, they've got a board of directors, and they're always wanting more money, more money, more money. And by doing this, they're pleasing them by giving them their more money, and to hell with the customers and the service that, you know.
Oh, providing. No, the customers are being provided for. You have to remember, a publicly traded company has only one customer, the shareholder. We are the product. Our money is the product they bring to those shareholders, to those customers.
They have a fiduciary responsibility to get all the money they can.
Yep. When you work with
So $1 billion isn't enough. I want $2 billion.
Well, we had a billion last month.
Yeah.
So this year we better have $1.2 billion.
Yeah.
Or my stock won't be worth quite as much.
Exactly. It means we're slipping.
It won't go up
failing.
As fast
yes.
as I want. Right. Right.
Something's
right.
wrong. You know, we got to do something better.
Right. Right. Right.
And the whole problem is I can't improve that much more. You can only do so much with the technology right now.
Well, and that's part of the issue. If people have an alternative, which we don't right now,
right?
I believe in many ways that we would all get off of every one of the current carriers.
Mm-hmm.
If we had a viable alternative, which we at this moment do not.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't.
But yeah,
after
the
Bell breakup, they've all repurchased and remerged themselves, and we're back. With the AT&T brand still owning pretty much everybody.
Yeah, but you know what? All right. We said this about, you know, cable and all that. And how, you know, things are changing there, which we thought they never would be.
You know? Yeah, it'll happen. It just hasn't
happened.
Well,
I read that.
I think there's something down the road. We just don't know what it is yet. But there's going to be something out there that's going to shake up all these carriers and all of a sudden cause them to back off and rethink, oh, that they're so cocky that they can just control everything. And I don't know what it is. I don't have a clue. I won't pretend to even know. But mark my words, there's somebody out there that will come up with something.
And I guarantee you it'll come out of one of the skunk works, like Google X or one of those, from any one of those companies that... that is out there. So
one of the things that I had heard on a podcast is that it won't happen until the current, you know, board of directors and company management, you know, retire and or die and are replaced by younger people who grew up with the internet and we want everything free.
Well, except that there's still the people who go into those things, the people who go on boards and stuff like that, understand their fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders.
Yeah.
You know, so even so, it's not going to be quite the same thing at all. And so I'm not entirely certain that's really going to work the way you think it should or want it to. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Roy from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Roy?
Good morning. I usually listen to your broadcast through the web.
Yeah.
On jazz901.org.
Yep.
And usually I listen on the low bandwidth setting, even though I don't have to.
Right.
But occasionally I listen to it on the smartphone setting, which I guess is true MP3.
Right.
Now, the MP3 thing hasn't worked on my machine here in the last 3, 4, or 5 days. And I wonder, it says it can't find the server on Jazz 9011.
Right.
Like
yeah,
that.
we changed the streaming server here at the station, and so the other two links should still work.
Yeah, the other one brings up Windows Media, and they work.
Yep. Yeah.
Thank you. They do know about it. That's not us.
Okay.
They do know about it, and we'll see what happens. Again, these things cost money, and you know, when we don't hit our goals, some things have to wait.
Okay, so I figured you'd know about it one way or the other.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Okay, so
thank you, Roy.
Anything with my machine, it's the station.
All right, thank you. Yeah, it's not you at all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah, it is. These things are not free.
Yeah, like we said before, when we're asking for donations, and we'll still gladly take donations. You know, it's something like we were saying. These pieces of equipment get used just about, I'd say, a good
24 hours a day.
18 to well, the actual.
Oh, you're talking about the CD players and
the
stuff.
Board.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Granted, at night, you know, it goes into automation, but there's a good 20, I'd say 18 hours. 18 hours, somebody's standing at this board doing stuff. And using
the stream
this,
is up 24/7.
And yeah, and that all costs money. Something breaks on it in the stream, it could be a server. Now, if that computer goes down, it depends on how much it went down in the computer. Like yep. I was just explaining right. to somebody, you know, I mean, you could bring in a box and say, all right off the bat, you see the power supply isn't working. So you try replacing that. And then you get that up. And then you discover, oh, it also took out, the hard drive's got some bad sectors on it. And one of the memory chips also right. got damaged. You know, it could be a multitude of things, but you don't, it's like an onion. You got to keep on peeling it to get down to the core. It may stink, but you got to get to the root of the problem and find out whether it's really worth all fixing or that, and just buying another one, which adds up to the expense.
Yep, that's exactly right. And we see it far too often when people say, well, you only fixed one thing. No, we looked at everything.
Yeah.
You know, we're not the great Karnak. We can't just lay our hands on it and say, oh, it's this board or that chip or whatever.
My crystal ball's out to lunch.
Yeah, right.
And even if the end answer is it's going to cost too much to fix and you don't fix it, so the end result is nothing changed. You
right.
still owe us for the service we did. We spent a lot of time figuring out that it wasn't worth fixing.
And
that's your question. All right, so it's going to be $800 to fix. That's up to you. Do you want to fix it? Do you want to buy a new one? And we spent that time figuring out what it's going to cost to fix.
Well, that's one thing. Folks got a little upset. I did that a number of years ago when they brought the machine in. And they said, I said, all right, we charge a diagnostic fee.
Yeah.
So I charged it. Well, why?
Because we're putting time into it.
I says, because if it's not worth it, I says, I have too many customers in the past that, I, you know, take it in and do the testing, and then they say, well, I'm not going to bother fix it. You can keep it. I don't want your piece of equipment. It's broken. You owe me the money.
And they never diagnose it. Yeah.
Yeah, right. No, goodbye. And I got stuck. So that's why I turned around and start charging a diagnostic. If you know,
an upfront diagnostic.
Yeah,
fee.
Upfront diagnostics. And if you want to go ahead with repair, you apply it to the bill.
I do not. You know, I'm not. I don't have a lot of money by any means. God knows, but I do not understand people who are that cheap. I just don't get it.
And it's weird because it seems to be only computers. You take your car to the garage, you expect to pay for their service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take your lawnmower to the repair shop, you expect to pay for service. You take your computer to the shop, you want it for free.
Yeah, or they get a friend that says, oh, it shouldn't cost that much.
Right.
Well,
and then
that's
you bring it in and you tell them, but my friend said it shouldn't cost that much.
Well, then have your friend do it for that much.
I told one person, I said, well, if you want your friend to fix it, fine. Well, he doesn't really know what he's doing. Well, then he doesn't have a clue what it takes to fix it.
That's
this
right.
all takes time. Yep. He goes, well, he said it should be an easy fix.
It should be, but it isn't.
It isn't. Yeah, right.
Right. You take your car out of the garage. It's not shifting. Well, that should be an easy fix.
Yeah.
No, it probably is a transmission issue, and those are not cheap.
But it's just that little lever.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right, but computers, everything is hidden, you know? We don't know what things cost. We know, just from osmosis of listening to other people talk over the decades, we know the transmissions are not cheap. We know that engine blocks can, rebuilding an engine is not cheap. So when we hear somebody say it's going to cost you $1,000 for a transmission, we go, yeah, okay, I get that. It's going to cost $1,000. But when somebody says it's going to cost you $400 for a new hard drive, or it's going to cost $600 to replace this or that, we go nuts. That can't be more than a $50 part. Well, no, it is more than a $50 part. And, oh, by the way, we have hours of it sitting on the bench that we're going to be doing the work. You can get your friend to fix it, but he or she has no experience doing it and can screw it up royally. When you bring it to somebody like Dave or Steve, one of the things you're paying for is professionalism. They have experience. They have an organization behind them that stands behind their work. And they have the ability to do this quickly and cleanly and with, you know, 20, 30 years of experience behind them. And if you don't value that, then have your friend next door do it.
Yeah. Well, I had another customer one time. I spent, and Steve can relate to this, a hard drive, and they had to have this information off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of these hard drives. I took it out of the machine, put it on my test bench. And it got to where I spent a good 7 hours at least, just me standing there.
Yeah.
You get the thing booted up, and you select a bunch of files. You know, it could be a couple hundred files. I'm going to move over to this other hard drive, and I go ahead, start it. I come back, because it's going to take a little while.
Yep.
The hard drive shut down again. So you got to let it cool down, bring it back up,
yep.
See what files copied over, reselect these other files, and start it. It took me easily over 7 hours. And it was a good friend. I gave him a good price on it. To this day, they're still ticked off at me that I charged him too much. I says, excuse me? I says, if you were anybody else, here's what I would have charged you.
Yep.
How do you get away charging that kind of money? I says, because I do what I do, and I take good pride in it. And you know what? I haven't had a customer even call this show complaining that I don't treat them fairly. I give everybody a decent, you know, rate yep. for the work that I do.
And that's how long it took, and especially data recovery. You know, I've had machines take months to recover the data.
Because you got to constantly let it cool off, start it back up, because it was a bad hard drive.
Yeah.
There's no getting around it.
So
you
spend
knew,
the
that, you knew that when you brought it in, that the hard drive was bad.
Spend the $100 and get a backup drive.
Well,
that would save the $1,000 in recovery.
I can't tell you over the years how many students have come to me with their thumb drives and said, my only copy of my thesis is on this. Can you resurrect it? Let me get this straight. You wouldn't spend $10 to buy a backup thumb drive, but I can spend 20 hours of my life recovering this? No. All right, listen, we're going to take a slightly longer break. And while we do, you get to sit and relax. We're going to do the same, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 1 o'clock. And we are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Soundbites.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edwards.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. Let me again take this opportunity to thank all those of you who pledged during our recent pledge drive. We did fall short of our goal, and that's on those of you who couldn't be bothered to pledge $5 or $10. But the rest of you, thank you so very, very much for your generous donations and for becoming part of the family and pledging to keep this show on the air. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from South Buffalo, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's up?
Hi, guys. Wonderful show.
Thank you.
And, you know, the topic of Netflix and, you know, the fall of the cable companies, you know, but what do you find in books? Like, I love reading stuff online because I can pull up another tab and then do a search on something.
Yeah.
And I love that because it's so much, it enriches the book so much better, you know. But I don't find that the electronic, like the e-books, are super expensive. And,
no.
You know, and I can buy the paperback copy for less than $10 with shipping.
Yep.
And the one I wanted was $115 in the electronic version.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just wondering, what, you know, just the, what do you guys see? I would imagine, I was thinking, the ways of the future should be libraries would have their books online.
Well, you can rent e-books from the library now.
Mm-hmm.
That's easy enough to do. You should go on the Monroe County Library site and see how to do that because it's doable. But yes, and there are. It depends on the book.
You're probably in Erie County, South Buffalo. Did you say?
Yeah, South Buffalo. Yeah. Erie, in your case, would be the Erie County. But the renting books is doable. Inexpensive books are available. There are a lot of 99-cent books on Amazon and on Barnes and Noble. But you're right. New books tend to be the same price as the paperback or hardcover edition. And in some cases, particularly with books that have a lot of illustrations or are very compute heavy in creating them, they can actually cost much more. And we're seeing it a lot. We're seeing it everywhere. My daughter had the only books she buys now that are actual paper books are her art books because she wants to see the illustrations. But the rest of them she buys as electronic copies, and even so, they are no cheaper.
Which is always annoying because there's no distribution cost, there's no production cost. They should cost less.
Right. But they don't yet. And you're absolutely right, Mike. We're seeing that change a little bit. A lot of new authors are part of either the Amazon or, Barnes & Noble doesn't have quite the same thing. But, for example, on Amazon, you can become part of the KDP, the Kindle Direct Publishing system, and you can set your own prices, 99 cents, $2.99, $3.99, whatever you want to price it at. And a lot of authors offer their first couple of books inexpensively, and then a lot of additional authors will lower the price of the book, like if they've got a series out, and they're on number 7, 1 through 5, for example, will be a lower cost.
And we're also seeing a lot of authors are, in essence, self-publishing, but it's an ebook file you download from their website.
Right.
And so they get all the money and don't have to go through traditional publishing means, which was always the thing with books and records, is that the actual person that wrote the book or made the record usually gets about 10% of the selling price. But so the agency model with Amazon and the Apple iBook Store, where the author gets 70%, that's amazing.
It depends. I get 35% for my two books because the books are only 99 cents a piece.
Yeah, Amazon does things a little differently. When they're really cheap, they keep most of the money. As it gets more expensive, it reverses that 70-30 split.
Right.
But for an author to publish it on their own website, then they can keep all the money. But then they don't have the marketing. So that's always right. what the book publishers were supposed to do is market your book. And so that's sort of where Amazon has come in to be the book marketer these days.
Right. And it's you're right, Mike. There's a bunch of inequities, you might say, in the system. But again, a lot of that has to do with the fact that, again, these books are published by an actual publisher. So they always are going to get their money before you go any farther. So you can see how much of that money that you pay for a paperback book actually goes to the publisher. A significant percentage.
And there are several online book sources available. Most of the university libraries have their books available online to rent and download. In fact, I just did a Google search for online books, and the first one that came up was University of Pennsylvania online library. 10,000 online books free to the public. So there are places out there, but there's no real central clearinghouse for it. Other than Amazon and their prices.
Well, and Project Gutenberg, if you're
Project Gutenberg
looking
for old stuff, archive.org, too, for old
and
stuff.
Archive.org, yeah.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Sure, but you're right, Mike. It would be nice if, and that's what a lot of new publishers are doing. They will put a book out on Amazon for 99 cents or $2.99 or $1.99 or $3.99 because they actually make more than if the book were published in paperback. And they don't have those publishing costs.
We talk about the decline of people listening to the radio as they're doing streaming music, but people actually reading books is probably declining a little faster.
And that's the other surprising thing. You know, I mean, folks have to stop and realize the time and effort that it takes to convert a book into voice that is clear.
Right.
And, you know, the processor can handle it. I mean, back in the day, it wasn't that long ago, folks. You know, some of these speech interpreters and, you know, synthesizers and that for reading a book was very difficult.
That's why Amazon and some of the other publishers have put together actual studios where they are doing professional recording for their audiobooks.
Yeah.
So, and one thing that Amazon's got neat with their Kindle bookstore is that if you get the ebook and the audiobook, they will synchronize themselves. So you read some in the ebook, you know, and I read before I go to bed, and then you listen to some in the audiobook on the way to work. It knows where you left off and keeps up with you.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah.
And actually, reading has gone up in particular because of one category.
Harry Potter.
Romance novels.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
People who take a commute, a train, for example, in New York or wherever, and commute for 40 minutes or 45 minutes or whatever those stupid commutes are, they used to not want to read a romance novel because they felt... People were watching them read, you know, because there's
the
that lurid cover.
Right.
Now nobody knows what you're reading on an iPad or on a Nook or a Kindle.
You got your headset plugged in and
you can be reading. I mean, it doesn't have to be sound, right? It can be
true.
Reading
that also.
And so, what we're finding, particularly on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, is that the number one new author 99-cent purchase is romance novels. And in all the genres, you know, from historicals to modern to, you know, whatever.
Dinosaur,
that's not a romance novel. That's erotica. There's a whole difference there.
No.
Yes, there's an entire genre of dinosaur human erotica. You didn't need to know that, and I apologize for Steve bringing it up and me perpetuating it. But there are lots and lots of genres, and romance novels, bodice rippers, erotica, whatever you want to call them, are now softcore porn. I don't care what you call it, are now a huge category because nobody knows you're reading them.
Yeah,
you know, and if somebody wants to know what you're reading, you can real quick switch over to Pride and Prejudice or A Brief History of the Universe.
Yeah, but somebody's not going to stare over, you know, even reading some of these, you know, off to the side, the screens, you know, you can't really read that well.
Right. No, but if somebody sits down and says, what are you reading?
Yeah.
Switch over to A Brief History of the Universe.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm reading the Screwtape Letters, C.S. Lewis. The who, the what? Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, see, now that's another one that could be porn.
It could be, but it isn't. It's actually
Steve's always got to go that way.
It's not.
That sound dirty but aren't.
Screwtape Letters.
25 years and there's still no
Do you know how long it took me to get through that book?
Yeah. Hmm.
The Screwtape Letters. I used to read it. I bought a copy to read on a train back when I was living in New York and coming home regularly to see my parents. My mom was not well. And I bought a copy to read on the train and some girl sat next to me. We chatted about it for a while and I gave her the book. So I bought another copy to bring back with me on the train to read on the book. The same thing happened.
Yeah.
I did that like five times. I bought six copies of that book before I actually got through the whole thing myself. It was it's an excellent book, but that one in particular.
That was a caller saying the online stream is down, but I look over.
Again, it might be the MP3 stream that's down, the very low-end phone stream.
Try one of the higher links.
Try the middle link,
Oh, well.
Well, like we said, these things will be fixed, but they take money, and they take time.
And it's the weekend.
It's just us computer guys here.
Yeah.
Well, it's like I kept saying last, you know, for the 2 weeks. You know, it's the three of us, And we're taking 4 hours, a chunk out of our days.
Well,
especially you two guys. You both have families, you know, and to cut out, because I'm always leaving my house. I don't know about you, but I leave my house at 11. I don't do much before that because I got to get ready, and I know I can't start anything because I got to be leaving the house at 11 and usually don't get home until 3.
Yep.
So there's 4 hours out of a Saturday. Most folks' day for doing a lot of other stuff, whether it's shopping, stuff around the yard, or whatever. We're here in a studio, and we're here 25, you know, on the air for 25 years, and most of those Saturdays, we're always here. Very few that we take off, unless it's a holiday.
And we do want to thank all the, those of you who were kind enough to show your appreciation for what we do. And pledge.
Well, did you
your
read that
money
letter
will
on the
help.
Bulletin board?
Not yet.
There's a really nice someone out there.
Your donations will help us fix things like the stream and everything else that needs fixing. But these things take time, and they take money, and so they're down for now. Well, those of you who did not pledge, that's on you. That's entirely on you.
The rest of the folks can smugly sit back and say, you know what?
That's right.
Hey, it's not because of me. I'm one of the members, and you know I help support this. So you know, you other folks, get off your butt and pick up. You know, go to the website. You can still make a pledge on the website securely if you go to jazz901.org. You could securely, while you're still listening to this show, make a pledge.
And in the comments, please say it's for sound bites.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
but it is all doable. We will get these things fixed. They just take time and money. And both are in very short supply at this moment. So I'm sorry. It just is what it is.
Too bad. So sad.
It just is what it is.
Uh-huh.
But we are still here, and we are making the show. So you can give us a call to ask your questions, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Oh, one thing I want to remind folks, this is the night that you got to turn around and fall back 1 hour.
Yeah, for those of you who still have clocks that you have to handle by hand that aren't network connected,
you got to turn them back. Well, my grandfather clock, that's a pain in the butt.
Well, then you're doing it wrong.
No, I have to stop
it. Oh, I see.
Wait exactly an hour
and start it
and
again.
Then start it again. Because that grandfather clock, you know, you still
It won't go backwards.
No, it doesn't go backwards.
You can set it ahead an hour.
Yeah, that's no problem. Going forward, I can do that. Going backwards, I got to stop it. And inadvertently, for a number of years there, I'd sit there and forget. Say, oh, shoot. I had to start it up and then try to go all the way around again. Yep. Oh.
Go forward 23 hours.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's basically what I had to do. And it's like, no. So now I got wise, and when I stop the clock, I set a timer.
That's a good idea.
On the phone, with the app, I set a reminder, and yep, away we go.
Yep. Yeah, no, I get that. Absolutely. All right, listen. We are going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes. We have Dave Enright here. We have Steve Ray here. And we have me, Nick Francesco, here. And we have all of you. And we'll be bringing you a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are here on this truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Okay, let's talk about your whiny first world problems. Apple fans hoping Cupertino's reality distortion field was going to do magical things to the battery life of its forthcoming Apple Watch had better reset their expectations to something far more realistic. The wrist computer will likely need charging daily, according to Apple CEO Tim Cook. So in other words, much like other high-end smartwatch wearables already on the market, and indeed, much like the mechanical watches of yesteryear, which needed winding daily. We think people are going to use it so much you would end up charging it daily, said Cook, desperately trying to spin this in some way that isn't just, I don't know. While he was speaking on stage in an interview at a live conference attempting to put a positive spin on it because people are disappointed that they've got another daily charging routine. So on the plus side, if you end up not using your expensive iWatch very much at all, you might not need to recharge it every day. Great! Battery life continues to be a serious bugbear for wearables and indeed an ongoing pain point for smartphones, although one that typically passes without much comment from Apple. My phone, my Galaxy S, Samsung Galaxy S5, lasts 2 days with normal use, 3 days if I don't happen to be doing a lot of use on it. But most have to be recharged every day, and the company Apple routinely shaves a few millimeters off its handsets every year. Thereby squeezing the amount of onboard battery real estate in the interest of being able to announce an even sleeker iPhone when, honestly, most users would probably cry tears of joy for an iPhone with a fatter battery. While smartphone users are largely resigned to the daily charging grind and or keeping a spare battery pack close by, well, that's not Apple people, of course, it's a pretty big ask for a secondary device to also need juicing daily, especially one that's worn on the wrist. The Apple Watch competes for wrist space with far far less smartwatches that nonetheless have far superior battery lives, being good for years of use, or indeed having automatic mechanisms that are powered by the movement of the human body so they never need recharging. For all its smarts, a smart watch that prematurely runs out of juice and reverts to a blank slab of glass is going to feel pretty dumb in comparison. The Apple Watch has a magnetic induction charging mechanism, including a magnetic conductor that attaches to the back of the device. Whether that familiar magnetic tug will help lessen the friction of daily charging, an expensive wrist-worn wearable remains to be seen. So is this a legitimate problem or yet one more whiny first-world problem? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Just how spoiled, privileged, and idiotic are these people who feel that it's an onus, a burden, to actually have to charge their smart watch every day. Wham, wham, wham.
What we're seeing is more and more people are buying multi-charging stations because you've got your phone, your tablet, your watch, your Fitbit, your whatever, times however many people in your family, so I need a 15-unit charging station.
Right, right.
But yeah, it's
or just stop wearing that device.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, people don't remember when you had to wind your watch every day. Or quit working. Yeah.
Up until a very short time ago, I carried a pocket watch. The reason I don't anymore is I can't find a decent one anymore for a reasonable price. But I used to carry a pocket watch, and I wound it every morning, or it ran down. And I didn't go whining to somebody that it didn't hold a wine for 6 weeks.
Why didn't you get one with batteries? Because then you'd have to change the batteries every 6 months.
Right. You don't have a lot of choices in pocket watches. Let's just put it that way. You wind them or you don't have one.
Yeah. There was a cute little thing where Apple was poking fun at themselves at the last announcement where they had Craig Federighi talking to Stephen Colbert, who they were talking about was the new chief of security at Apple, and so Stephen was telling Craig to go get back to work because you know what I see when I look at my wrist there's no Apple Watch on it, so go get back to work.
I was talking to a guy who's got a Moto 360 wristwatch. Holy moly, that's a nice toy.
Yeah,
that's a really, really nice toy.
A lot of people were expecting the Galaxy Gear to be good, but it turned out not to be. But right. The Moto 360 seems to be pretty good.
It's an awful nice watch, and you can set it up so that the battery lasts you a couple of days. But again, why? So what? You have to charge it at night. I guess there are people who just never take off their watches. But for those of us who actually do...
Well, because it's a fitness meter and it watches my sleep. So I charge it when I'm in the shower.
Then what we need is
everybody put a Tesla coil in their basement.
Power, exactly. Yeah. We need broadcast power. Oh, yeah. Nikola, where were you when we needed you? You did it in your head and you never wrote it down. These we can do this. It's Nikola Tesla solved this problem. We need Wardenclyffe back up and running.
But like you, I prefer a pocket watch to a regular wristwatch. I mean, I wear very little jewelry. This one band.
I wear none.
I got this one.
And I'm Italian. I should be wearing pinky rings.
Mingya.
Yeah. And the little,
your gold
you
chains.
Can't say that on the radio.
And then the little horn around
the cornu. Yeah.
But no, I this one
the little maloikia, the little thing. Yeah.
All that stuff. You know,
I don't wear any of those.
You should be jingling as you're walking
I
up
should,
and down
the gold chains
and the gold bling.
I got the chest here. Where's the rest of it?
Yeah, and all that bling, you know.
I know.
The lights should be shimmering. Even off your bald head.
Exactly. I just have never been a jewelry person of any sort.
Yeah, same.
And
here.
My wife, God bless her, understands that because I don't even wear my wedding ring. I don't
your
like
your wedding ring.
My wedding ring. I don't wear it because I don't like things on my hands or my wrists. I don't.
That's why
I was carrying a pocket watch.
That's the only other thing I will wear is a wedding band. But otherwise, no, I don't like a wristwatch. Especially when I was working on computers. You know,
although I did have a lust for the Moto 360, I will admit I had a brief fling with wanting to get one of those. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's quite all right, my friend. I can sympathize. You know, it's like, It hurts bad.
It does hurt bad. Yeah. It was really.
They
are very nice devices, and the changes you can make to them, the stuff you can do with
them.
Yeah,
and it's just and that's where some women don't understand. It's another toy. Yes, we don't need it, but do we really have to explain? It's
that's
a toy, and we need it.
How many purses do you have?
Yeah.
Do not ever ask that question. Oh. Have you not learned that yet? Do not ask that question.
Some lines Shoes? You can cross, Steve. Some. It's like on the break, we were telling you what you can and can't do. You want to stay married.
That's right. Yeah.
It's certain things that you just gotta go, yes, dear.
Yeah.
That's okay. Thank you.
Yeah. But yeah, I
But they gotta learn to understand though. There's certain things, you need.
You gotta
have. Not because if they come to you and say, do you really need it?
Yep.
No, I don't really need it, but I really want it.
But I decided I needed to save my shekels because I definitely am getting a green light, and so I would rather spend my money there than on a wristwatch that I really am not going to wear too regularly. I know I'm going to be the last person on the street. I'm going to be the last person in the neighborhood.
They're going to go down your street
and thumb their noses at me.
Wave at you and keep heading for Brighton.
Why am I laughing? Yeah.
Because you know it's true.
No, it's true. But I'm really looking forward to it. Mark Murphy.
They sit there and look at that street. Oh, hell no.
Mark Murphy speaking at RIT tomorrow. I think I'm going to go sit in the back and hold up a sign that has my address on it. So I'll do it.
You know he's going to write that down and say, I got a stalker. Stay away from that neighborhood. And then all your neighbors are going to be ticked off at you because they got passed
off. We had him on the show when they were first starting out. We should probably have him back at some point to talk about how it's going. How people are responding and that sort of thing.
That'd be cool.
If you've got green light, which is fiber to the home, for those of you who don't know, it's fiber to the home, 100 megabits per second for $50 a month, gigabit for $250 a month. And they'll, gigabit really is being used for apartment buildings and things like that. Clearly, most people are not going to pay $250 a month.
Businesses.
But if you've got it, let us know. Tell us what you think, how it's working for you.
That'd be cool to hear, yeah.
We're very interested in hearing that. It's 585-966-JAZZ.
Let's see if we can get Nick drooling.
Please, 966-5299 or toll free 1-800-790-0415. And those of you who have some form of fiber in other cities, give us a call.
Because we want to know.
We want to know.
Really.
Oh, golly.
You remember when cable internet first came and we could get rid of our dial-up?
Yeah. I remember how fast it was when it first came in.
Yeah, because you were the only one using it.
I was the only one in my neighborhood using it.
Very limited
beta,
usage,
I was a beta tester for them, and consequently, it was hella fast. The problem now is with something like 100 megabit, you're really... What you now notice is the lag at the other end and the lag in the internet itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because when things come to you, they go through however many routers, 2, 5, 20 other routers and systems to get to you, connections on the internet. And all of those slow the traffic down a little. And also the fact that the system at the other end may not be instantaneously responsive. So although you are at 100 megabit, you rarely actually get 100 megabit to your desk. But the main thing for me will be the fact that when my daughter is streaming movies and I'm streaming movies and my wife is on Castleville,
mm-hmm.
we're not going to have a lot of slowdown for anybody. So
that's
really the best part about it right there.
Now we're bandwidth to share in your family.
Right, exactly right. And that's the big thing for us. I was telling my daughter two things. I said, we just got HBO and we're getting green light technology. She said, I'm moving back home. I said, if I'd known it was that easy, I'd have done it 4 years ago.
But, you know, maybe that's also stifling the cable company. Remember, changing, wanting to change the rates and everything, the hikes and all that type of stuff. And I think another thing, and again, this is
It's competition.
Yeah, and another thing that I think might have done it, I might be totally wrong, is, all right, Frontier DSL.
Yeah.
Their speed is their speed. They can't crank it up, but it's a constant, one price.
Yep.
And it's good. It's reliable. I use it. Whereas the cable, they keep saying, you can do this, this, and this, and then they wanted to start charging you more because they can.
Right.
Because they can control it. Whereas DSL, it is what it is, and they can't do anything about it.
Well, they all have different service pricing. In fact, both of the companies are offering, $14.95 a month or $19.95 a month for their basic internet service, which is like 1 megabit.
Right.
Which is faster than a modem, they're quick to point out. But
the thing of it is, though, the phone line, you can't do it any faster.
Right, but they do offer slower for cheaper.
Well, it depends on where you are, because it's really distance-based.
Yeah, exactly. It's all off the D-SLAM.
Right,
The D-SLAM.
It's all out of the central office. Yeah. So however close you are to a central office is the speed
you get. But I'm saying this other competition, and now with, like you say, green light in there, I think that's putting more pressure on them, which is a good thing, that they're backing off from throttling folks down, saying, if you're going to use this much, we're going to charge you more. It's only fair. Whereas, like you say, you get green light, and for $50 a month, you're going to gain a lot more speed, and they're not talking about any limits.
And or no caps.
Yeah, no caps.
Right, so, Greenlight says right in the thing, no caps.
So these folks that want to watch their movies, or like they say, which we've been talking about, is being able to pull up on your laptop and then stream it right to your big TV. Any of these programs. Instead of watching it on that little screen, bring it over to your TV, hook it up with an HDMI cable, and 55 or 60 inch screen, whatever you have, playing it there and playing it on your sound system. Heck of a lot better.
I just bought a Nexus player for $99. It does, it's essentially a Roku box with a lot of streaming audio, and I can cast my screen or my tablet or whatever to the television. So that's nice. Listen, we're going to take a short break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite. So I had to go take a look at Internet 2. See, we're on the Internet. Really? Yeah, it used to be the Internet was just the government and a couple of research organizations. And then they opened it up to the riffraff, so we're now all on the Internet. But basically, there are things you can do for that. What happened was... they opened up the world to the internet, but basically anybody with a spool of wire and a rusty set of pliers is now on, you know, can say they're an ISP and put other people on. So the government now has its own internet again that none of the riffraff are on. They call it Internet 2. It has 8.8 terabits of capacity, that's bandwidth, and 100 gigabit ether technology on its entire footprint. That is to say, the slowest you can be on Internet 2 is 100 gigabits. 100 gigabits.
Yep. I'll take two.
Exactly.
So the 1 gigabit card I have in my computer is going to be saturated.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty full. Yeah. I think you got that right there. Yeah.
So I can have 100 gigabit cards in my house, so 100.
That's right. That's exactly right. But I think this really is the wave of the future. I mean, we've been talking about this the whole show. People who are cutting the cord, people who are now streaming audio and video and everything else you can think of, really need advanced, high speed, reliable, no throttling internet. When you've got kids, they play games, and those games nowadays are high res, they're super high res, super fast, huge bandwidth hogs. If you suddenly find, well, we see that in Second Life.
Yeah.
When your son is playing a game, Second Life slows down for you. And wouldn't it be nice if it didn't do that?
Yeah.
And that's the idea behind that high speed business. When one person is iTunes, any of the streaming audio services don't take up a lot of bandwidth.
No.
So audio doesn't take bandwidth. But when you're doing Netflix or Hulu or YouTube or Vudu or Crackle or, you know, any one of those,
right,
and then somebody else is playing Gears of War and somebody else is trying to do Second Life and somebody else is trying to do Castleville,
forget it.
Your network is pretty saturated unless you've got something like fiber.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the whole point.
It's a reality of
the idea is you want to have enough service in your house that you are not constrained by your internet speed. It's tablets, it's phones, it's televisions, it's everything. It's everything nowadays connects. Your thermostat connects. Your refrigerator will connect.
Oh, yeah. You can sit there to your tablet. We sell devices that you can hook up to your home so that when you are on your way home off your tablet, you can quick go to that, turn up the temperature, tell it to turn on the lights. It's going to be dark by the time you get home. And when you get home, boom, all of a sudden the garage lights are on and, you know, temperature is up, and all you got to do is hit that button to go into the garage, and you're all set. You can also set up cameras, so while you're at work in that, you want to, you know, watch the kids as they come home, make sure they're not getting in any trouble or anything else. You can do that too.
Right, right.
And the speed is really phenomenal, and that's where a lot of folks get lost too, because they'll sit there. Well, it's not as fast as I want. Wait a minute. If you tried 10 years ago to do this, forget it.
I remember CUCME at 1 frame per second.
Yep.
Yeah, and the delay was always a few seconds.
Yep. And the reality is that it's not as fast as you want it to be. It's as fast as you're paying for it to be.
Yeah.
You can get it faster if you're willing to pay for it faster. And the reality is that in the future, we will need that sort of speed. We will simply need it to do all the things we want to do. And I can't imagine what the future is going to look like.
That's going to be scary.
Because once you have that kind of bandwidth, the stuff you'll be able to do and the speed at which you'll be able to do it opens up a whole new thing. We're going to find amazingly different ways to use the internet for entertainment, for business, for everything. We already suck more information out of the internet than our grandparents and even our parents ever conceived of.
And that becomes the problem with bandwidth caps, is that if an ISP is capping how much you can do on the internet,
mm-hmm.
or if they're making edge companies pay more, you know, the recent Netflix has to pay Comcast, even though they're not part of Comcast Network. If internet companies are making you pay more because your traffic is being used more, then that's going to stifle competition. We may not have gotten YouTube. We may not have gotten Netflix if those caps were in place earlier. I was just reading an article this month about a guy. He had a 400 gigabyte monthly cap, and he thought that was a lot until he happened to look at it and had used 300 gigs in the first week.
Yep.
Because he had downloaded Lollipop and he had downloaded Yosemite, and he had three computers that he downloaded everything on, and he was using Carbonite to back everything up, and he was using SugarSync to sync between his computers, and suddenly everything is using that bandwidth.
Yep. And that's why we don't want to see that stuff.
We're very lucky here in Rochester that we don't have bandwidth caps
yet.
But
I think that's
thanks to Phil and John at stopthecap.com. Anytime someone thinks about caps, they leave this grassroots.
And think about people who suddenly got jobs that would never have had them before.
Yeah.
You look at the YouTube sensations, as they're called. Jenna Marbles, who's from Rochester, is making a living, a great living, probably not a, you know, she's probably not a multimillionaire, but she's making a living doing YouTube videos. Where would that job have been before this?
Right. And again, like we pointed out, I think with having other competition come in, that kind of levels the playing field for us.
The best thing that happened to Rochester was Greenlight.
Yeah.
It really was. And here's the thing I don't understand in every city in America. Why is it that it's not happening, that in every city, the city fathers and mothers are saying, you know what? We need to bring in high-speed broadband. We need to do it and offer it to our people as a service of the city.
There actually have been cases. It was a big one in Philadelphia where the city tried to do that, and the local ISPs sued the city for restraint of trade and won. Here, City of Canandaigua's got public internet, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, in Rochester, it's a little different because Rochester teamed up with Frontier to create a public Wi-Fi network.
5 minutes of free Wi-Fi.
It always gets listed as free because it's 5 minutes free, but you do have to pay for it. So it is available, but it's not what we wanted.
Right. It takes you 5 minutes
and
just to
that
log
stops
on.
Like two houses from yours, too?
Yeah. I only have 5 minutes of it, but you're right. It stops like two houses away from me.
Just
if
like
I walk
light.
Down to the corner, I can get it. I know. We're going to see that happen. This is what I don't understand is why is it that my friend Jerry Seward, God bless him, a wonderful human being, he always says that broadband is the Erie Canal of the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
What made Rochester what it is today is that we crossed the Erie Canal and the Genesee River, so things could move up from the south to the Great Lakes and then across to the west. They could come east and west through the Erie Canal, and it's what made Rochester the crossroads that it has always been. And it's the 21st century version of that. You think of the businesses you can bring to town when you say to them, we have fiber to your business, and it's going to be inexpensive because it's a city service. I don't understand why that's not being done. And I'm in a sense grateful that it's not, because it means Greenlight has a green light here in the city to actually do what it needs to do, and that's great. But I do not understand the thinking that goes behind saying we don't need that, or we don't want that, or we're not going to do that because I don't know what the what would be.
Somebody's being paid off.
Well, there's right. there's lots of
I'm
fiber
sorry,
in.
Somebody's got
dark
be.
Fiber yeah. all over the city,
but no one uses it because it's too expensive.
I don't get it. I don't understand. You know, it would be. You know, people are talking all the time. We have to bring businesses to Rochester. Let's mm-hmm. bring businesses to Rochester. This is how you do it. There are so many people starting internet businesses, and they don't start them in Rochester because there isn't that sort of infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose there's a reason, and I'm not smart enough to know what it is, but I don't know what it is. I'll tell you, though.
They can't make enough money doing it.
That's basic.
The city's not supposed to make enough money doing it. They're supposed to break even. It's a city.
Well, it's just like that ticked me off going back a little bit. Netflix there. You used to get both the DVDs and watching the online stuff for one price.
Mm-hmm.
And then they broke it off so they could get, more money. You pay for one service, it's one price. A separate price for the other.
Shareholders.
Yeah. Again, doubling it.
Shareholders. It's how it works. And I get it, but I don't have to like it.
No, I think they lost a lot of people.
But that's all right. We're getting... And the other thing, of course, about having fiber to your home is that your home is now worth more money. If you're going to go sell it, it's worth more money to have fiber to your home. We see that across the nation all the time. And it's an interesting thing that a lot of people don't see that as a feature, and I'm looking right at it, man. I'll tell you right now. All right, listen, we've ranted our way with the whole half of the show was Uncle Dave's Story Hour. We ranted our way through an entire hour. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so no worries, really. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. And once again, thank you to all those of you who pledged during our pledge drive. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 167 hours.